In the next hour, the NHS is set to ban all homeopathic treatments for patients because it's not evidence-based and any benefits are down to placebo. Do you agree that homeopathic treatments are a waste of scarce NHS funds which could be better devoted to treatments that actually work? Other treatments set to be banned include herbal treatments, lidocaine plasters, omega-3 fatty acids and the unlicensed use of the painkiller coproximol. Well, why not go the whole hog and just say that homeopathy is just a complete and utter waste of time and money and that people who use it should be using something else, like the NHS medical treatments.
On FM, online, on your mobile and on digital radio. Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC. Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale at Drive.
Hello, a very good evening. It's 4 minutes past six here on LBC. Later this hour, I promise you, and I've been promising this for the last hour, but we are going to cross to Washington to find out why Sean Spicer, Donald Trump's press secretary, has resigned. So that'll be coming up sometime during this hour. But I want to talk about homeopathic treatments, which we have talked about occasionally on the programme before. And I'll lay my cards on the table right now. I don't believe in them. I think it's a load of hogwash, to be honest. I think they don't do any good at all. There's no scientific evidence whatsoever that they work. And I think it is an outrage that the NHS has been spending money on homeopathic treatments. Well, no longer, because doctors should no longer prescribe homeopathic medicine to NHS patients according to new guidance from the health service set out in a draft document. NHS England said the decision had been taken because at best, and this is their words, not mine, at best homeopathy is a placebo and a misuse of scarce NHS funds which could be better devoted to treatments that work. Well, hear, hear, say I. Well, according to a consultation document, the NHS currently spends £92,400 a year on homeopathic treatments. Doesn't sound an awful lot of money, does it? But even so, that could be better used on something else. And this homeopathic treatment uses highly diluted doses of natural substances that some claim help the body heals itself. But when you hear some of these treatments are supposedly able to cure cancer, I mean, I ask you, does anybody with half a brain seriously believe that that kind of treatment could cure cancer? Well, if they do believe it, I'm afraid they are likely to be sadly deluded. So I want to know what you think about this. Okay, it's a small amount of money, but I think look after the pennies and the pounds, look after themselves, as some people say. So I wonder whether you think that this is the right way forward. Now, also allied to this, other treatments could soon be banned by the NHS. They include herbal treatments, lidocaine plasters, omega-3 fatty acids, and the unlicensed use of the painkiller coproximol, which was withdrawn from the market in 2007 due to safety concerns. I have to say, my mother used to swear by coproximol and was absolutely bereft when it was withdrawn from the NHS. So, want to hear your views, 0345 6060 973. But before we come to your calls, let's talk to Michael Marshall, Project Director of the Good Thinking Society. And they're an organisation that previously threatened the Department of Health with a judicial review if it failed to put homeopathic remedies on the blacklist for prescriptions. Michael, very good evening.
Hi there, hi. Thanks for having me.
Hi, what's your reaction to this news today?
Well, I think this is an excellent step in the right direction. Very clearly, if something has been shown not to work, then we shouldn't be spending what little money is available on the NHS on that product. And we can say, yes, it's £92,000 worth of homeopathic prescriptions, but that actually only covers what you can get from a GP. If you look at homeopathy on the entire of the NHS, it's around about £5 million. Or it was a couple of years ago. That started to come down as partly groups like ourselves have been campaigning to have all treatments to try and ensure that they are based on good evidence, and homeopathy certainly isn't, and partly because GPs and people involved in the NHS will recognise that if there's no good evidence of something, it simply isn't responsible to be spending public money on that when that £5 million a year could be going on more nurses, it could be going on junior doctors who have obviously been on strike recently over their pay, it could be going on other treatments that actually work. So I think this is a fantastic step in the right direction. It's the start of the consultation, so they are still looking for organisations and members of the public to say what they think about this. But I think this really shows that we're making a step in the right way.
But people who believe in homeopathic medicine, they really believe in it. It's almost a religion to them. What do I say to people who will inevitably phone in this hour and tell me of incidents where they believe that homeopathy has cured whatever was wrong with them?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there are many, many listeners who will feel that homeopathy has been effective for them. But I think what's important to recognise is that the people who've tried homeopathy and it didn't work for them aren't going to call in particularly. It's the people who feel that it was effective are the ones who are most kind of motivated to call in.
Now, but they can be very convincing. From previous phone-ins I've done on this subject, they tell you their stories, and I sit here and think, well, that sounds completely convincing to me. But then you, the logical part of your brain switches in and thinks, well, there must be some other explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm certain that people who believe that homeopathy has been effective are incredibly sincere. I wouldn't doubt them for a second in their sincerity. I don't believe that that's the best explanation for what happens. I mean, often we see people will say that homeopathy was very effective for their eczema. Well, eczema is something which famously, classically, will wax and wane. So one week you'll have a terrible condition. Your eczema will be in very, very bad condition. The next week it might have cleared up a lot and you might go a couple of weeks without a particularly bad bout. If you take something homeopathic just as the eczema was going to get better anyway, you might well ascribe the recovery to the homeopathy and rather to the natural progression of eczema. And we see this with lots and lots of different conditions. There's so many different factors to take into play that it can be very easy to pin it on homeopathy, but we have to follow the evidence. We have to look at not just one case, but thousands of cases at once, so we can get the right statistics to allow those disciplines.
What about things like echinacea that people absolutely swear by? Now, is that homeopathic treatment or is it herbal treatment? I'm not sure which that is. But
that's a herbal treatment, yes. Yeah. So the difference between herbal and homeopathic is a homeopathic remedy takes something, and it might be a herb or it might be something quite obscure. I've seen homeopathic remedies made out of the colour blue, homeopathic remedies made out of pieces of the Berlin Wall, which apparently was for separation anxiety. I mean, it's comical when you think about it, but it takes those starting points, and then the feature of homeopathy is that you dilute and dilute and dilute until there's nothing of that original substance left. So when we're talking about the £5 million the NHS is spending on homeopathy, we are literally talking about remedies that have not got a single active ingredient in them. They're just sugar and water, nothing more than that.
But
so that's a very specific area.
But do you believe herbal treatments can work?
It very much depends on the herbal treatment. That's by and large, when you're looking at a herbal treatment, at least there is something in that. And, you know, your average herbal treatment will have lots of different chemicals in it. And some of those chemicals might be effective. We know that aspirin was made from willow bark. But when you have a headache, you don't go off and chew a willow tree. You take an aspirin because they've isolated the chemical in willow that is effective for painkillers. For clean pain, they've been able to get that chemical, they've been able to regulate the dosage so you know exactly how much you're getting, they've been able to take out all of the other things that might not be good for you. So where you get a herbal remedy that can be effective, often what happens is we find out why it's effective and then we synthesize that into something that's just as effective without you having all of the uncertainty of how much you're taking or all of the negative side effects. Because herbal remedies have negative side effects occasionally. I mean, you see things like St. John's wort. People don't realize when they talk to their doctors, they say, well, they won't tell their doctors they're taking St. John's wort for mild depression. But that has interactions with other drugs, and it can actually stop the contraceptive pill working. So people don't realize often that the herbal remedies themselves are chemical remedies. They're just as chemical as the pharmaceuticals that people might want to avoid taking. But we have to make sure that we know what we're taking, and that's the key with herbal remedies.
Michael, thank you. That's Michael Marshall from the Good Thinking Society. Rachel Roberts joins me now, Chief Executive of the Homeopathy Research Institute. Rachel, good evening.
Hi there, good evening.
Hello. Now, I don't know if you've been seething for the last 6 or 7 minutes or so, but...
No, it's nothing I haven't heard before.
I'm sure. Give me your reaction to what the NHS has said today.
Sure. I mean, the first thing to do is to acknowledge that people do get very emotional about this subject, and I think it's very important to bring it back to facts. And as the previous caller already mentioned, we're actually talking about a minuscule amount of money here. £152,000 in prescriptions out of £11 billion a year in the NHS, or £4 to $5 million for the whole service out of £100 billion. So this really isn't about economics. And if you're going to talk about money with healthcare, you have to be quite blunt and you have to talk about value for money, not just the actual figures. And you've got to remember that the patients who go through the NHS and are being prescribed these medicines by doctors, all of them have already tried conventional medicine, all of them, because I know the doctors personally who treat these patients, and that's what they tell me. So these are patients for whom either conventional medicine just hasn't worked, or they can't be given conventional medicine because it's contraindicated, because it's too dangerous because of some other health problem they've got or some other drug that they're using.
I mean,
got to keep in mind that what are these patients going to be treated with if they can't have the homeopathy? And don't we think that actually this small amount of money, if those patients are reporting a benefit, it's money very well spent.
Well, if there was any scientific evidence that it was a benefit, I'd agree with you, but there isn't, is there?
That's a myth that's reported far and wide. And I know it's hard for listeners to take my word for it because they've been bombarded with information saying homeopathy doesn't work. But for people who really want to look at this for themselves and make their own mind up, I would say go to our website, the Homeopathy Research Institute website. We have FAQs that address all of these arguments. It's placebo or it's coincidence, like your previous caller said. And when you look at the evidence, that just doesn't pan out. Just a really simple study. Your caller mentioned talking about thousands of patients rather than one or two, and a study that looked at 6,500 patients going to the Bristol Homeopathic Hospital found that 70% of them reported improved health. Now, that doesn't sound like coincidence. That sounds like medicine working for those people who want it. And it's not being forced on anyone who doesn't want to use it, but it should be available for those who want to choose it.
Someone's just texted me this. Since homeopathy is based on infinite dilution and water that's recycled, we're all treated for everything for free. He's right, though. Homeopathy is based on dilution, infinite dilution and water.
Like giving you part of the story, isn't it? So when you make a homeopathic medicine, you don't just dilute it. Otherwise, there'd be nothing there. We're not that stupid.
But it is based around dilution, medicine, isn't it?
It involves dilution, but it's a two-step process. So you dilute and then you succuss. This is a vigorous shaking. And any manufacturer of these medicines will tell you that you have to shake it between each dilution. And the physicists who are exploring how these medicines work know that that succussion is completely necessary to produce an active sample. And you might say, how do we know they're active? And we know they're active because they're tested on laboratory experiments with isolated plants or isolated blood cells or tadpoles. We have all sorts of plant and animal models. You can read these experiments on our website. So I'd like anyone to explain to me how a homeopathic medicine changing the growth rate in a plant or changing the growth rate of a tadpole is placebo. And we have studies showing that.
Can homeopathy cure cancer?
No. Any more questions?
Well, so no, I just ask you people who phoned in before, on this have claimed that it can.
Okay, so I just want to put this again into perspective. So we just held a conference in Malta with Professor Michael Frass from Vienna, who works in oncology. He was talking about his clinic. Now there, homeopathy is used alongside conventional medicine, and the biggest improvements he sees after many years working with cancer patients using homeopathy is that it gets better quality of life, their health improves, they perform better during their chemo, they survive their radiation better. This is all about complementary care. So it's only people who want to damage the reputation of homeopathy.
No, it's about desperation, isn't it? Because let's face it, if any of us had an illness which we thought that traditional methods wouldn't cure, we go in search of everything that we think that maybe could do it.
Of course, people will always search for solutions to their health. I think everybody's been there. You just want to get better. But like I said, you know, reputable homeopaths, medicines are being prescribed carefully and ethically alongside conventional care. That's normal homeopathy.
Okay, Rachel, thank you. That's Rachel Roberts from the Homeopathy Research Institute. I think they'll fire me from this hour soon if I don't start pronouncing that word correctly. 0345 6060973. Should natural treatments be available on the NHS? What are the benefits of homeopathy and should it be separated from other natural remedies? Can natural remedies work alongside conventional medicine? Has that worked for you? Or do you think it's all a load of quackery? I can pronounce that word. This is LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 6:17. And Maura Alderson has the news headlines.
Ian Dale at Drive on LBC.
21 minutes past six here on LBC. So, homeopathy. The NHS are going to effectively ban it on the NHS. No more prescriptions, no more treatments. Do you think that is the right way forward? Stan's in Hampton. Hello, Stan.
Good evening, Ian.
Hi.
I believe it's quackery. I'm with you. Your opening statements echoed my feeling completely. I have experience of it to some extent, but I think there's a professor called Edvard Ernst, and he was the first ever professor of alternative medicine and was in charge of all the homeopathic hospitals, both in Europe and in England.
I think we've spoken to him many times on the programme.
Brilliant man, absolutely brilliant. He was a professor both of mainstream medicine and alternative medicine. He did a 10-year double-blind study to prove that homeopathy works, and at the end of it, he resigned from every single hospital and said, and put up money to say, it doesn't work. I'm sorry, it's no better than a placebo. So he did all of that. He's the scourge of them at the moment because he was their golden boy.
Why is it that so many people are taken in by it?
We believe in fairies. We believe in religion.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. You're opening up a can of worms there, aren't you?
Yes, I know I am. But at the same time, our Prince in Waiting is a very, very strong homeopathic believer. It doesn't mean it's right. And part of the work I do is a behavioural consultant with animals, dogs in particular, and certainly homeopathy has been used on dogs. And in one case, I tried to alleviate distemper with it.
Oh my goodness!
Dog died. Every single one they tried it on, it died.
It shouldn't be the dogs that be put down. It should be the owners in those circumstances.
You're absolutely right, but they believe in it. That's the problem. And I think they believe in it because they need something to believe in.
So you're a dog behaviourist. What do you do then?
I'm an expert witness under the Dangerous Dogs Act, but I deal with very, very difficult and very troubled dogs. We have spoken on a number of occasions when children have died and things like that, and you use me as a talking head.
I thought I recognised the voice, Stan.
Yes. Yes, we have spoken on a number of occasions, but on this particular occasion, I have real problems with it because they're replacing the vaccinations that dogs need as puppies and using homeopathic nose herbs, and these dogs are dying.
Stan, thank you very much. Let's go to Nick in Gloucester. Hello, Nick.
Hiya.
Hello. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, basically, listening to your callers earlier saying about the homeopathy not being proven, all that, and the side effects, as I said to your person who answered the phone then, there are loads of side effects with authorised medicine distributed by the NHS. I myself have been prescribed various things in the past, and when you read the leaflet that comes with it, kidding you not, it actually said it can cause kidney failure, it can cause cancer, all these possible side effects they're warning you of, because they have to, I suppose, from prescribed medicine. I must admit, after I'd read the leaflet, I decided,
your line isn't great. I'm going to leave it there. Interesting point that you made there. Thank you very much. He's right, isn't he? Of course, there are side effects from a lot of different authorised drugs. So the drugs that I take for my diabetes, they can have side effects. One of which, particularly, is to put on weight, which is always my excuse. So it's not my fault. It's the drugs that do it. But I'm not sure that argument works in terms of being against homeopathy, because of course, if you say that there are consequences from homeopathic treatments or indeed herbal remedies, that is the same, I suppose, as other things too. Sam is in Richmond. Sam, what would you like to say?
Hi, Sam. Hi, Ian. sorry, I've been.
So many people do that, Sam, and I've never quite worked out why.
No, because I've been dealing with Sam all day today.
go on.
Right. So basically, as I said to your colleague, I think it's quite a sad day for NHS to say that, you know, they're going to stop homeopathic medicine, because I truly believe that it should be a choice down to the patients of what they want. And the reason why I say is I don't believe that there isn't enough evidence. Now, I was born and brought up in Nepal. My dad himself is a homeopathic physician. So throughout my teenage years, and I mean, since birth until I was the age of 19, I only and only used homeopathic medicine, and that cured my all sorts of diseases that I had since, you know, my childbirth. So to say that there's no evidence is absolutely
nonsense. Well, give me an example of an illness that you had and the treatment that you took that cured it.
For example, jaundice. I had jaundice. I was only treated by homeopathic medicine. I had diarrhea, you know, simple things from diarrhea to serious things like jaundice, chicken pox, every single thing. I had always ever been treated by homeopathic medicine. And that's me personally. You know, my brother was the same thing. Pretty much all of my family.
And do you still take it?
Yeah, I still take it. Every opportunity that I have, I still take homeopathic medicine as far as I can. And I'm not saying that, you know, I haven't taken conventional medicine. I have also taken conventional medicine, but there have been instances where homeopathic has treated me much better than conventional medicine.
But if there was evidence, scientific evidence, proper researched evidence, that whatever treatment you had for jaundice worked, do you not think that clinicians would have adopted it?
Well, that is why I'm really surprised, because I think, you know, that there's always been an agenda. Let's face it, right? You know, there are billions and billions of pounds being spent on researching conventional medicine, right? Homeopathic doesn't have that sort of funding behind it. So I'm saying that there is an agenda in trying to stop homeopathic medication for...
That's a conspiracy theory, though, isn't it? I mean, I've got another one here. Ed in Dorset says, pharmaceuticals means lots of lovely, lovely shared dividends. Homeopathy means no shared dividends. I mean, that's a stretch too far, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. Because, you know, unfortunately, it is the truth of the world. These days, people, you know, care more about money than most other things. That's the truth of the matter.
So do you think it is these big pharmaceutical companies that are they've somehow got together in a little cartel to say, look, we've got to stamp all these homeopathic treatments out because they threaten our profits? Is that really what you think is happening?
There is certainly an element of that. I'm not saying that is the only reason, but there is an element of that. There's certainly an element of trying to destroy any other alternative medication. And as I said, I don't necessarily think, you know, homeopathy will work at every single scenario.
Okay.
But it's definitely not fair to say that it does not work at all.
Sam, thank you very much for your call. Cindy says, years ago I worked for an international medical trial testing company, and many there conceded that drugs worked if you believe in them, even with placebos. We'll take more of your calls on this. Really interesting call so far. 0345 6060 973. Do you think natural treatments should be available on the NHS? What are the benefits of natural treatments, and should homeopathy be separated from other natural remedies? This is LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 6:31. And Moira Alderson has the news headlines.
The environment.
25 to 7 here on LBC. Let's get a business update from Henrietta Grimston at Seven Investment Management. Henrietta, good evening.
Good evening.
Now, this time last week, I was kind of itching to get out of the studio to have a drive in my new Audi, which I just bought that day. You have some news for me.
I do, and this actually relates back to the emissions scandal that we heard a lot about in 2016 to do with Volkswagen. Now, the big German car manufacturers tend to produce an awful lot of diesel vehicles, and there is growing concern about actually how good they are for the environment. Specifically in Germany, there are some German cities that are contemplating possibly banning diesel vehicles outright from the city centre. Now, Audi, along with actually Mercedes earlier on this week, have offered to recall some of their European vehicles to upgrade the software, theoretically making them more environmentally friendly, in the hope that that would preempt a ban coming in.
So does 850,000 vehicles, is that like every Audi in the last 5 years or something?
Well, it's their top-of-the-range Audis that are specifically saloons, estates and SUVs, but Mercedes, it's 3 million vehicles that they've offered to recall. It's not compulsory, so it is voluntary, but it's still an awful lot of cars.
Now, the Bank of America has chosen Dublin as its EU base.
Yeah, now, we know that obviously there are a lot of complications with Brexit, but one of the issues specifically with the financial services sector is that if you have a headquarter here in the UK and you currently operate across Europe, you do so under something called passporting. Now, we do not know at this stage whether that facility is still going to exist as of March 2019, so businesses are scrabbling to make sure that they have a base somewhere in Europe. Bank of America, of course, have chosen Dublin, and we've heard that banks such as Citigroup and Morgan Stanley have chosen Frankfurt. And the theory is if they can get themselves a base there, then if there was an issue with servicing European clients from the UK, they've already got a foot in that camp. But it's going to be expensive for them to move staff over there, get premises, and actually update an awful lot of systems as well as part of this.
And how did the markets finish the week?
So it's a red day across the board, I'm afraid, from a UK point of view. FTSE's closed down 0.5% at 7453, pound weaker against the dollar at 1.30 and weaker against the euro at 1.11.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Henrietta Grimston at Seven Investment Management.
Ian Dale at Drive on LBC.
6.37, Gary says, what's your new Audi then, Ian, an S5? Nope, it's a Q7. Simon Marks joins us because we have been building him up all the programme because we're very excited to learn that Sean Spicer has resigned as Donald Trump's press secretary. Why is this, Simon?
The day has finally dawned, Ian. There has been a straw that has broken the camel's back. And the straw was the appointment by Donald Trump of one of his old friends, financier by the name of Anthony Scaramucci, a man with no previous government communications experience, to be the new director of communications at the White House. That's the job that Sean Spicer wanted. It would have left Sean Spicer reporting to him. And Anthony Scaramucci is deeply, deeply controversial among President Trump's top aides. So Sean Spicer, we are told, went to see the president and vehemently objected to his appointment of Anthony Scaramucci as Director of Communications, then handed in his notice and left the White House for the last time. But that may not be an end to all of this. Reince Priebus, the White House Chief of Staff, is said to be absolutely furious over Anthony Scaramucci's appointment. So too is Stephen Bannon, the president's grey cardinal, the former head of Breitbart News. So whether we're going to see a bigger bloodbath over the next few hours or over the weekend, I think remains to be seen. One has to have, I think, limited amounts of sympathy for Sean Spicer. This is a man who over the last 6 months has shown a remarkable propensity to lie and dissemble on the president's behalf. From the White House podium, he has been completely unlike any previous White House press secretary in terms of his willingness to tell falsehoods to reporters and oversee, in the last few weeks, a communication strategy that has closed the White House briefings every day to cameras. However, it's also fair to say that the role of press secretary for Donald Trump is an almost impossible one, given the president's insistence on using Twitter as a tool of communication, leaving the press secretary and the somewhat hapless deputy press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, playing a constant game of catch-up in a bid to understand exactly what the president means when he publishes some of these somewhat erratic and unpredictable Twitter messages. President Trump clearly thinks that the appointment of a new director of communications is going to solve all of that. I suspect he's wrong, but over the next few weeks, we'll all find out.
And we will enjoy finding out. Simon, thank you. That's Simon Marks, our US correspondent. 20 to 7, if you just tuned in, we're talking about homeopathy. Why, you may ask? Well, it's because the NHS is not going to prescribe it anymore, saving some money, not a lot of money, it has to be said. I'm wondering whether you think natural remedies can work alongside conventional medicine. Has that worked for you? And do you think natural treatments should be available on the NHS, or do you consider them to be, well, quackery? Pav is in Slough. Hello, Pav.
Hello, evening, Ian.
Hello.
Your show.
Hi, welcome.
Thanks. Right, I agree with the decision to take homeopathy off the NHS, basically because I think the whole process of evidence-based medicine that we have is quite robust. For example, when a new drug comes into the market, you know, the science behind it is proven, but that's not enough. And, you know, you have to have trials where the drug is pitted against a placebo, et cetera.
Mm.
You know, so people improve on the drug, but people can improve on the placebo as well when you do trials. So it's not enough to say that, oh, some people improved on the drug, therefore it works. There needs to be statistically significant margins of error and margins between the drug and the placebo to actually allow the drug onto the market. Now, if homeopathy hasn't stood up to that process, then I think it's perfectly reasonable to take it off the NHS. You can, you know, and I've seen people rely on homeopathy and not rely on conventional medicine and get even worse in their conditions. And the whole argument about, you know, saying things like, oh, I had a fever, or I had diarrhea and I took homeopathic medicine, that doesn't really stand up, because a lot of diseases, a lot of conditions have natural causes. And, you know, you can have a fever and if you're relatively healthy and you've had a flu and you rest and take fluids, etc., you can just get better.
Well, I was going to say that to the guy from Nepal, because yeah, that seemed to be the natural response. But then I thought, well, I'm not a doctor. I can't say that, because how would I know?
The thing is, some things can just get better on their own. And it's not enough to say, oh, well, I took this medicine at the same time, therefore the medicine cured it. You see, there can be other factors involved as well. So that's why any drug that we give in conventional medicine on the NHS has gone through robust clinical trials, and we're quite, you know, we have evidence behind it. And so I think it's a lot of the things, people like the whole conspiracy theory thing, thinking, oh, it's the pharmaceutical company is causing trouble, but it is expert.
Okay, Pav, look, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line, because our next caller has got a point which I'd like you to respond to, if you would. Is that okay?
I will try, okay.
Paul in Kidderminster, tell Pav what's happened to you.
Yes, well, homeopathy works for me. In my 20s, I had some very persistent stomach digestive problems that actually went on for about 15 years. And when I tried a homeopathic remedy, I was much better within a couple of days and cured within a week.
And what was that remedy?
It was called a lycopodium.
Sounds nasty.
A chemist friend of mine said, very innocuous substance. I don't know what he knows about it, but it's one of the standard things.
That cured something that had troubled you for quite some years.
A very long time, yes.
Right. Pav, you're a doctor. I don't know if you've ever heard of lycopodium.
I haven't, no.
Oh,
that's a shame. I'm happy for the gentleman if it worked. You know, that's great. But the point I was trying to make was, individual cases aren't enough for the NHS to approve, you know, treatments. For example, you know, you can give someone a placebo and whatever their condition is can just sometimes get better for a number of different reasons.
So you need to prove a link over a number of people over time, I guess. But of course, the power of positive thought, I suppose people will say, is brought in here, because you're given something, your brain sort of says, oh, that might work, and if you believe in it enough, I suppose that's an argument here, Paul, that that might be applied to you, and that might be nothing to do with what you took, but you believed that it was going to work.
Well, actually, at the time I took it, I was very sceptical.
That blows my argument then, doesn't it?
My wife, who'd said, try this, because she believed in it, I didn't believe it, and I didn't think anything would happen. I was very surprised when it did.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much for that.